If I ask you to name a society that's highly organized and cooperative, that wages war, practices agriculture, and sometimes herds livestock, you could guess I was asking for any number of human groups. But if you said an ant colony, you'd also be correct. We're joined now by entomologist Mark Moffat. He has been studying the similarities between ants and humans, and his photographs of weaver ants found in the treetops of Southeast Asia appear in the May issue of National Geographic magazine. Welcome to our show.
Hey, Leonard. Good to be here.
When you look at an ant colony, how many similarities do you find with human society? Or maybe am I asking the question backwards? When you look at human society, do you see a reflection of an ant colony?
Well, I tend to be rather brave when I think about this because I think modern humans share a lot more with many species of ants than we do with our closest relatives, the apes. I mean, what ape needs to deal with highways and traffic rules, with market economies and voting, with agriculture and livestock domestication, environmental health issues, division of labor, teamwork, warfare, terrorism, slavery? Ants do all these things, often in rather surprisingly parallel form.
Now, you said many species. Not all ant colonies do all these things?
Well, in both ants and humans, a lot of things emerge as societies get bigger. So things like warfare actually came about in humans from most people's perspective after the evolution of agriculture. So societies rose in the tens of thousands and more, and ants as well. Their societies get into the millions. Only in ants and humans have societies of the millions. Then you start to get some of these features really markedly shown.
Now you mentioned the market economy. Are ants actually engaged in business?
Well, Deborah Castle at the University of South Florida has found that ants will actually return, fire ants will return from foraging with goods that they want to essentially sell at a marketplace. They go into an area of their colony, and other ants looking for goods come and inspect the various goods and select the ones that they distribute within the society. And the ants that get the most popular goods go out and collect more of them, and others change their jobs. And it's really kind of a market economy situation.
I guess there's an ant, Milton Friedman.
Yeah, well, they don't really need a Milton Friedman. This is the really cool thing about ants. They don't have leaders. The queen gets the name queen for no particular reason. She's simply the mother. Ants actually function without leaders through a network of individuals that individually they don't know nothing. But in a group, they tend to make the right decisions. And this is the fascinating thing that's being studied a lot by computer scientists and others now working with ant colonies.
It sounds like some people who join political groups. Two of your former students wrote a paper on ant warfare and found that, I'm quoting, a principal difference between humans and ants is that whereas we send our young men to war, they send their old ladies. Is that because there are more females in ant colonies?
Oh, those are my not my students, but my masters, E.O. Wilson and Bert Holdobler, I studied under them. And indeed, ants are, in a sense, more logical about their warfare. It makes sense to put the least valuable individuals on the front lines. And we put our young, vigorous males and wipe them out. Ants, in fact, use the elderly and infirm as much as possible, and the cheapest possible labor. So, yes, they have a different approach.
But aren't they also matriarchal societies like bees?
Indeed. There's not much use for a male in an ant society. Just what do you do with them? You throw them out, basically kick them out after a few days. Males have one function in ant societies. Okay, they have sex. Well, they have two functions. They have sex and they die. That's basically all a male gets to do.
You've been studying weaver ants in Southeast Asia. Are they much different from the kinds that we would find in our backyards or walking through our kitchens?
Well, weaver ants are extremely organized. I'd say the ultimate superorganisms in the sense of the complexity of their communications. They have societies up to a half million covering several trees, and they communicate all kinds of details to each other, including the location of enemies, of terrain that needs to be conquered, of where to build nests, and how to catch different prey.
Wait, did they communicate? That means they have some kind of language?
They do, and at their size, smell works really well. Ants use certain kinds of vibrations, and in other words, sounds, but most ants are really like dogs and leather, a lot of mammals use odors, and they actually release bursts of odors that indicate different things. They also have little kinds of dances they do at each other. In the case of weaver ants, they actually have little mock battles they do at each other to indicate that there's a fight afoot.
Now, we mentioned they also, some ants engage in livestock and herding. What kind of livestock do they have?
Well, in their case, milk comes from aphids and kin, and a lot of these aphids have adapted to be with the ants. In other words, have been modified over time, domesticated, as it were, to live with the ants. They've lost their ability to defend themselves, for example. And in some cases, the ants and the aphids live together entirely, and they actually have a herding lifestyle where they carry the aphid from place to place in a nomadic lifestyle that's familiar to many Asian societies.
And they farm as well, ants farm? What do they grow?
The weaver ants actually have completely domesticated a fungus. Sorry, not the weaver ants. The leaf-cutting ants of South America have completely domesticated a fungus. That fungus is found nowhere else, and they have an assembly line of workers that tends the fungus by growing it on a mulch of leaves that have been chopped up into bits. And that fungus is only found with the ants. They apply pesticides. They weed out all foreign fungi. They do everything you can think a farmer does, and they are absolutely particular about their food. Just like we want the perfect Macintosh apple, leafcutter ants, they have a particular strain that they love in each colony, and they only allow that strain.
Now, should we think of an ant colony as an organism in itself, not just the individual ants as having their own specific functions, kind of like a super organism?
Yeah, no, I know Tim Flannery was just talking about that, and I actually think ants would be very scary things to compare us to in terms of what humans want to be. They do form superorganisms, and it's based on a nationality. It's an identity that they have. Ants essentially have their national flag emblazoned on their forehead. It's the scent of the colony. Every ant has it. No ant is allowed to defect. No ant can go off and become a hermit. You are stuck with your colony for life, and therefore you're willing to die for your society at a moment's notice. That's why invasive ants are so hard to stop. And they form these unions that are, in a sense, very perfect, but very unappealing from a human point of view.
Well, they sound kind of fascistic.
Oh, well, yes, they are perfect that way. I mean, Marx should have been an ant, really, Karl Marx.
Because that would have been his ideal form of communism?
Yes, I think so. Ants, as I say, they're basically, in that sense, they really are like single organisms. The cells in our body identify each other by certain chemicals on their surfaces, and the immune system will attack any outsider. The ants identify themselves equally by scents on their body surfaces, and they attack any outsider. If you wanted, I actually got interviewed about alien invasions once, and I tell you, if there's an alien invasion, we have to hope they're like us and not like ants. We allow foreigners in. We allow different family groups to live together. Ants do not.
Mark Moffat is an entomologist who has been studying the weaver ants of Southeast Asia, and photographs from his article in National Geographic are on our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks, Leonard.